Welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Heather.
And today we will be discussing and reviewing The September House by Carissa Orlando. As usual, let's talk about our fuel for this discussion. What are you drinking, Heather?
I am currently drinking one of those like Crystal Light concoctions, you know, like the little powder and you put in your water bottle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got caffeine in it.
Ooh.
It's the wild strawberry caffeinated. So let's
wild
see
strawberry.
How late it keeps me up tonight.
Probably a bad idea, but that's fine.
Exactly.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I had a boring coffee this morning, but I did see that, you know, the Chobani creamers, which are mm-hmm. so good. I didn't realize, because I just go and like buy my normal creamer every time. I didn't realize that they have like 1,000 flavors now.
They do.
They had cinnamon coffee cake, cookie dough, white chocolate mocha, pumpkin. I was like, where did all
cream?
This come from?
The sweet cream is my favorite. The cookies and cream one isn't bad either. I've had that one before.
I want to try the cinnamon coffee cake because mm-hmm. that sounds good. But sweet cream is definitely my favorite. I just didn't know that they had all of these different flavors now.
And the peppermint mocha I've seen out too already.
For yeah. I've seen holiday ones out. So mm-hmm. We weren't doing like full grocery shopping because we're going to be traveling, but I was like, next week I'm getting a couple of these mm-hmm. flavors. I gotta try mm-hmm. some of these, and because I like them, I'm sure I'll like the pumpkin one, so I'm gonna get that one too.
I'm sure. And keep an eye out, because I feel like at least once a month ShopRite does the deal where they're like mm-hmm. 2 for $6.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, because mm-hmm. I know that Eric and I will want to try different flavors mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not gonna buy $5 creamers.
I got the new Starbucks one that came out. It's non-dairy. It's like a mix of oat milk and almond milk, but it's the sugar cookie flavor.
I saw that one.
I heard it's really good, so I bought it. I haven't tried it yet, but I bought
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, they had it in the little, mm-hmm. you know how they have like the seasonal.
It's very expensive. It's like $5.
Yeah, but I did see that it was a blend of oat and almond,
mm-hmm.
so that Which sounds like. Pretty good.
I like oat milk, so I'm hoping mm-hmm. that it's not, the almond milk isn't too overpowering.
Yeah. Almond milk doesn't have a strong flavor. It's just thinner.
Uh-huh.
So it might not be creamy enough, but I want to hear how it is. It sounds
I'll tell
like
you,
good.
For sure.
All right. Well, cheers to our future coffees that we're going to enjoy.
Exactly. We're putting that out into the universe. We're going to have delicious coffees at some point in the future.
Stay tuned. I know this is very riveting to come information. Anyway, okay. Let's talk about this book. So, Carissa Orlando has a doctorate in clinical community psychology, where she focuses on children and adolescents and aims to improve the quality and accessibility of mental health care to children and their families.
Love that.
We love a queen who cares about mental health. She's always been passionate about creative writing, but of course, this is her debut novel.
Of course. Are we surprised? No.
Not a single person. So The September House came out in September 2023, so 1 year ago, perfect timing, and it was nominated on Goodreads for Best Horror and for Best Debut Novel. It didn't win either of them, but that's okay.
Okay, what won Best Horror, do you know?
For 2023, I'm not sure. I know that actually Hidden Pictures won it for 2022, which is weird. Let's see. Holly by Stephen King.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
That does make sense. If there's a Stephen King, it's going to win.
It's going to win.
At least that's like legit horror.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So really not much more about the book or about Chris Orlando. So let's just get into it. Here's our Goodreads book summary. When Margaret and her husband Hal bought the large Victorian house on Hawthorne Street for sale at a surprisingly reasonable price, they couldn't believe they finally had a home of their own. Then they discovered the hauntings. Every September, the walls drip blood. The ghosts of former inhabitants appear, and all of them are terrified of something that lurks in the basement. Most people would flee. Margaret is not most people. Margaret is staying. It's her house. But after 4 years, Hal can't take it anymore, and he leaves abruptly. Now he's not returning calls, and their daughter Catherine, who knows nothing about the hauntings, arrives, intent on looking for her missing father. To make things worse, September has just begun, and with every attempt Margaret and Catherine make at finding Hal, the hauntings grow more harrowing, because there are some secrets the house needs to keep. They give a lot.
They do, but not enough.
Yeah, it doesn't spoil
anything. Give you any idea of what the story...
Yeah. And also, they hint at the humor a little bit, but not a lot. All right, so I knew we were in for a treat based on the very first sentence. The book starts out, "The walls of the house were bleeding again." And that's how you know you're in for a good horror novel. So we start with Margaret and Hal, who finally are able to buy their own home. Their daughter is out of college and has a good job, and finally the time has come. They find the perfect, most beautiful house, and everything is too good to be true, because this house is haunted. Infested with ghosts, one might say. And we've got quite a cast of ghostly characters.
Truly do.
Some are polite and helpful. You've got temperamental ghosts who only respond poorly to specific situations. Child ghosts, some nice and harmless, others a little bratty. And you've got some downright mean, harmful ghosts. And all of these ghosts are at their most active during September. Brilliant move, by the way, because October would be a cliche.
I agree.
So let's talk about our ghosts. First, there's Frederica. She's a housekeeper. She cleans, she organizes, she cooks dinner, she makes tea excessively. She also has her head split open from an axe wound.
Yes, she does.
Which was a little off-putting at the beginning, but Margaret is used to it. Then there's Elias, a 10-year-old boy who doesn't speak but does occasionally bite.
And, like, screeches.
Yeah, he makes a sound. They describe it as a jet engine noise, which sounds horrifying.
Terrifying.
And then his face, his mouth opens up and spins like the Tasmanian devil.
Yeah.
Very intense. Angelica, who doesn't speak, but points at... Oh, she does speak a little bit. She says...
He just says he's down there.
Yeah. She points at...
There's not any other dialogue that she says.
Yeah, that's the only thing she said. So she points at the basement door, and she has a bad head injury. And it seems like one of her eyeballs is not there. Not great. Blythe, a woman who has been burned to death, and freaks out anytime a fire is lit. Understandably. Jasper is Blythe's husband, who killed her and Frederica. Charles and Constance are twins with many, many stab wounds. Julian has a slash across his stomach where his intestines occasionally spill out. Henry has no arm. Pretty much all we know about him. James has no legs, so he just kind of drags himself along, trailing blood. And Master Vale. He's the bad ghost. He lives in the basement and, long story short, he's from the original family who owned the house. He was a quote-unquote bastard child. So he was abused and mistreated, and that abuse was a horrible cycle because once the rest of his family died, he started kidnapping and murdering children.
Terrible.
Then once he died because of some cannibalism of the children, he haunted all the future owners of the house and forced them to do horrible things. So we'll obviously get back to him later. Whenever Margaret touches a ghost, she sees through their eyes and feels how they were killed.
That was a really cool concept.
Yes, especially when sometimes she's rationalizing it. She's like, oh, I don't really feel like seeing this axe go through Frederica's head, but I really need a hug.
She's like, I really don't want to deal with this headache, but...
But it's worth it today. So then we have the September things. The walls rain blood. And it starts with a little trickle in the bedroom at the beginning of the month. And as the month goes on, it just expands and gets farther and farther down the house. Down the stairs, through all the rooms. It's a lot. And at the beginning, Margaret was trying to clean it up. She would scrub it every morning. And then the next day it was there again. So she just decided that's kind of a waste. At the beginning of the month, there's moaning, which turns to screaming, but the moaning sounds worse because the moaning whispers her name and it just sounds horrible. There are suicidal birds. Another book, that I chose where there are
oh my God,
an abundance
so right.
of birds. What is going on?
You're the bird lady.
Ugh. I'm terrified of birds. Anyway, so...
You sure? Because you seem to like books that have birds.
That's why I picked them, because they're extra scary. Because they have birds. And then during the month, there's also lots of extra prankster children. Frederica starts acting strangely, rearranging the house and putting things in weird spots. And like I said, over the month, things get worse and worse. So by the end of September, it's no holds barred.
Just bedlam.
Absolute chaos. Mm-hmm. And Margaret's at the end of her rope. Then we have a couple other characters who are important. Father Cyrus, who comes every other month to bless the house and give them a brief respite from the ghosts. Then there's Edie, Margaret's friend who sits on the porch with her and her first real friend since she can remember. Love Edie.
Mm-hmm, me too.
So Margaret has her nonchalant attitude towards the ghost and her rules to cope. Her philosophy is that the hauntings are a small price to pay for her dream home, and if she abides by the rules, things are much easier and, of course, survivable. So throughout the beginning of the story, we're with Margaret as she deals with her fourth September in the house, and she's alluding to the fact that Hal couldn't take it anymore, and he up and left. So their daughter Catherine keeps calling, looking for her dad, and Margaret is trying to make excuses and distract her, but Catherine just went through a rough breakup, and it turns out she's got a lot of time on her hands, and she won't be dissuaded. So she tells Margaret she's coming to visit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's never been to their house before in all 4 years. And Margaret starts to panic a little bit. Catherine may have some questions with the blood and the moaning and the boards nailed over the basement door.
Mm-hmm.
So she has Father Cyrus come immediately. And something new happens. He opens the basement door, levitates above the ground, and spits out a swarm of flies.
Terrifying.
So needless to say, he leaves in a hurry. And there's a lot of added stress now, because he didn't get to finish his blessing. So Margaret doesn't even know if it worked. So once Catherine arrives, we've got equal parts disappearance investigation, haunted house story continuing, and a lot of unresolved family drama coming mm-hmm. to the surface. So Catherine had a very tumultuous relationship with both of her parents because Hal is an alcoholic and a physically abusive husband. Margaret learned to adapt to Hal's abuse in order to survive and justified it because as long as Catherine wasn't being directly affected, Margaret could handle the brunt of it. And in her mind, that was protecting Catherine. Obviously, we know this is not the case. Catherine's going to be affected by it, whether she's being abused herself or not.
Exactly.
But in Margaret's mind, she's doing what's best for everyone. And one day, Hal breaks Margaret's rules by almost hitting Catherine. And Margaret absolutely loses her mind. Hal almost beats her to death.
Mm-hmm.
But she sends Catherine away to live with her sister. This is obviously going to affect Catherine. I think she was like 15 or 16.
She was young. Yeah, she was yeah, still in high
school. Mm-hmm. She was a teenager. So she resents both of her parents, and she also has inherited Hal's temper and anger. So it's very complicated. But anyway, Catherine is here because despite her feelings toward her parents, she's worried about her mother. Between the stress of September and the lack of sleep, Margaret is acting very strangely, and Catherine thinks that her mother must be having mental issues because Catherine can't see the ghosts. She just sees rearranged furniture, mm-hmm. dirt in the cupboards, knives in the bathtub.
The stove constantly on.
Constantly on. The burner turned all the way up, which would terrify me more than yeah. any of the ghosts, honestly. The bites from Elias just...
Mm-hmm.
She just sees all of these things and is like, what the hell is going on?
Which was, I thought was interesting because... You thought that when Catherine was showing up to the house that she was going to be able to, like, see all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this put this terror into Margaret that she has to dose her daughter with, like, sleeping pills to make her sleep for the night so she doesn't hear, like, the moaning. And
yeah.
then come to find out that she can't even see anything. And you're like, oh, like, she literally was stressing out for nothing.
Well, yeah, not nothing, and but. Margaret is freaking out. She kind of knew that they're... are some ghosts that don't reveal themselves mm-hmm. to people because Hal couldn't see all of them. And it took Edie a little while to see them. Father Cyrus can't see any of them. So she obviously had to prepare in case Catherine could see them.
Mm-hmm.
But then she's just like, oh, huh, I guess she can't. So Catherine also wants to know what happened to her dad, obviously. So she is, because when she talks to Margaret about it, she's like, so you haven't heard from him? You have no idea where he is? And she's like, no. And she's like, are you not worried? And she's like, nah, I don't know, I guess not. And it's just so unlike her mom.
Yeah.
So she conducts her own investigation, as every book entails. And she starts visiting bars and hotels in the town. At first, Margaret accompanies her, but weird things happen when Margaret leaves the house. Mm-hmm. So she eventually leaves Catherine to it. Catherine finds out where he stayed and that he came back to the house the day after he left. So the police come to question Margaret and they find Hal's mutilated dead body in the basement. Then everything gets really sad because Margaret has no proof of the ghosts and her husband's dead body's in her basement and she's babbling about Master Vale and the pranksters and the only one to corroborate her story that's alive is Edie. And so she sees Edie and then Edie confesses that she's a prankster too.
That was a really, really cool twist.
It and was.
I didn't realize it at first and then I started to catch on probably three quarters in when they kind of mentioned that there was no other houses around her
mm-hmm.
and she kind of made it sound like Edie would come out of her house in the morning to come sit with her. And I was like, well, if there's no house there, then how was she doing that? So it,
yeah.
Eventually I caught on to the fact that I thought Edie was a ghost of the house as well. And turns out she was.
Yeah, there were definitely hints. But then the way that it was revealed in that moment where she's Margaret's only hope was so mm-hmm. sad.
And then she's like, I'm so sorry. Like, yeah. She apologized. She was like, I was going to tell you. But
I just wanted a friend. Yeah. And because Margaret mm-hmm. vent to her about everything. And it was her first, like I said, her first real friend in as long as she could remember. And the first friend that Hal hadn't alienated her from.
Exactly.
So Father Cyrus has died. He was seen as a liability with the church, so his word means nothing. Edie's a ghost. And Margaret starts to remember that there are no ghosts. And she did hurt herself, and she did hurt Hal, and she did make all of this up. And the cops are ready to arrest her and have her taken to a mental health facility where they can help her. And Margaret is resigned to this because what they're saying makes sense. Mm-hmm. So she gives in. Here's where I got disappointed. Because Margaret wasn't crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like where this was going. But that feeling lasted about 10 pages max.
I know.
Because as the cops are walking her out, the house decides to show itself. Because it doesn't want Margaret to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So there's moaning, blood flowing from the stairs, doors slamming, hundreds of birds slamming into the house. Then something new happens. I highly recommend reading this description because it is graphic mm-hmm. and hard to explain.
Yes, it is.
Basically, one of the cops, every bone in his body starts to break as his body is turning inwards on itself. They describe it as a spider dying yes. when it just kind of rolls up into a little ball, which was a great visual. That made me picture it. It really was,
actually.
Then the next cop, same thing happens. And the detective has a gun to Margaret's head telling her to make it stop as if she's causing this witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
But just as he's about to shoot, his chest snaps in half and the same thing happens to him. So then we're left with one detective, Catherine, and Margaret. And of course, Master Vale decides it's time to join the party.
Mm-hmm.
He comes and grabs Catherine and yeets her away to the basement. But there's one thing that Margaret doesn't stand for, and that's someone hurting her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So she tackles Master Vale so Catherine can escape, and she decides she's done playing by the rules because he took it too far going after Catherine. She's screaming at him to get the fuck out of her house, which I really thought would work, but it doesn't.
Of course not.
I was really waiting, for it to work.
If it was that easy.
I was like, keep going, Margaret. It's going to work. It doesn't. But the house comes again to save Margaret, and the pranksters and Fredrika and Edie gang up on Master Vale. They chase him from the house, torturing and dismembering him along the way. And each prankster is inflicting the same violence on him that he inflicted on them.
Yeah.
So the boy with no arm rips his arm off. Mm-hmm. Blythe sets him on fire. It's very well done.
It is.
So Margaret finishes him on the front lawn with an axe to the head, and all is well and happy at the September house. So what did you think of this ending?
I thought it was brilliant. It was, I think, the pranksters all coming together in the end to help, you know, cast out Master Vale was just pure brilliance. I understand that they are ghosts, but I feel like they kind of saw a kindred spirit in Margaret, so they all liked her. Like, I loved Fredrika. She was my favorite. Mm-hmm. Just her relationship with Margaret was really something. Like, it was really beautiful, realistically.
Mm-hmm.
And so them all coming together and just castrating the fuck out of this guy.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny that you say that they saw a kindred spirit in Margaret, because she was also the first person who wasn't driven to do something horrible by Master Vale. She was the first one who was kind of immune to his influence.
Although when she saw him for the first time, it did scare the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah. Like, no, he was, thank you. It was giving like a zombie Slender Man.
Yeah, I was definitely getting like Slender Man. And
he's covered in lesions sores. And yeah. Sores.
And then when he just said like he, oh God, I can't. It's like, it's literally my nightmare.
And he's so pale because he never left the house. The cannibalism really got me. And they just kind of skated right over it.
They
and
did.
I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
So I also love the ending, because this is where a lot of haunted house stories can turn for the worse.
Yeah.
When the ghosts actually come out, it can get really cheesy, really fast. And I mean, this is where a lot of haunted house movies can also turn for the worse.
I didn't get any sort of predictable, cheesy vibe at all from this
Me
book.
Either.
Everything was just pure originality, which I really enjoyed. And it scared me, like, multiple times. Like, it just really, like, creeped me out multiple times.
So, in a Q&A with Carissa Orlando, she says that she wrote September House this way because usually in haunted house stories, there are two outcomes, flee or fight back. But she created the third option, which is to adapt.
Okay.
And so that's what this was. That's why it was so different and so original from any other haunted house story that I've read.
Yeah, because what sane person would want to reside in a house that's haunted?
And not even in a denial way. Because, you know, you see a lot of movies
clearly,
where it's
like
this is made up.
She sees them every month. It's not just in September.
Mm-hmm.
But she just pushes it aside when September comes. She's like, oh, okay, like, I know what's going to happen, and I'm just, like you said, adapting.
Margaret is an unreliable narrator, which, in my opinion, every good horror story needs, because you need to have that uncertainty. And, you know, when she's convincing herself that she did make up everything, and she's able to explain everything away, you're like, oh, shit. And you know that it's not true. You know that Margaret's not crazy. But it has that little inkling of doubt because so much is going on in her head. And because she was, when she was leaving the house, she was paranoid and hallucinating and all of these things. So you're like, oh, maybe there is something wrong with her. Plus, they introduced that her dad had mental health issues. So it runs in her family.
Even so, like all the little backstories, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's
so much family drama and history.
Yeah, the dynamic between Margaret and Hal. Because, of course, when you first start the book, it seems like Hal is like this really wonderful husband and father.
And they're so happy.
You come to find out that he's not. He's a domestic family's worst nightmare.
So why doesn't Margaret leave? I think the way that the author paralleled Margaret staying in an abusive relationship with staying in her haunted home is so well done. She finally decides to take a stand, but of course, it's not directly to Hal or directly to their marriage. She decides to take a stand for her home. Mm-hmm. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. She's had enough. This is where she's finally going to stand up and say, I'm done. Mm-hmm. After years and years and years of abuse. I want to read a couple of quotes that have this dual meaning for both the house and her relationship with Hal. One of us needed to make some compromises, and my ability to bend was my strongest asset. I loved this house, and you didn't give up on the things that you loved. There are rules to these things. Everything is survivable. And when you think of it in the lens of this abusive relationship, yeah. It's so obvious that these are the things that she has to tell herself in order to go on, in order to deal with this every day, in order to convince herself that she's happy. Mm-hmm. And then with the house, it's so much easier for her because she's already been doing this forever.
I was just going to say, she's already been... She knows what abuse is like, mm-hmm. So she's kind of, it seems like whatever the house does, it's, she's already been through it, so the worst you could do is kill her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she's like, even when things are bad, they're actually pretty good. This is still a great house, regardless of, even, you know, when there's pranksters running around.
I know.
What did you think about Catherine and Margaret's relationship?
It was, I don't know if I'm being honest with you, because it was kind of like a weird dynamic, which is understandable considering like what the family went through. And my assumption is that this was the author's point, like that she like, wanted to get across, because it was, there's such a weird family. And then you have Catherine who doesn't want to be her dad, but turns out to be her dad. And she's kind of, I don't know, like she's just so mean to her mom.
I know. I don't like Catherine.
I didn't like Catherine either. And I was like, you're so mean to Margaret. And I feel like Margaret's just trying so hard to give Catherine, like, love and a stable relationship, even though she really can't.
Mm-hmm.
And so just the way that she treats Margaret really didn't sit right with me, which I think is the point. But then it's, I liked the end.
Yeah.
When Catherine stands up for her mom and, like, helps her go against Master Vale and is
mm-hmm.
hits him with like a frying pan or whatever. It is a baseball.
I think a baseball bat. Yeah, like, a baseball bat.
You know what I mean? Like she just starts attacking Master Vale, who's trying to kill her mom, and so that was a really nice serendipitous moment. But the rest of the book, it's just like Catherine's kind of painting her mom to be a crazy person, which mm-hmm. isn't great.
And it lends to this. Yes, this is this darkly funny haunted house story, but there are these really dark, deep elements because Catherine does mistreat her mom, and Margaret has this kind of, you know, battered wife, always being put down and always just agreeing even when people are mean to her. And then you understand why Catherine has hard feelings, and you understand why she's upset, and she says to her, why didn't you leave with me? Why didn't you leave him? Why, you're still going to take him back now? So she has all these unresolved issues. So it makes sense, but you still want her to be nicer to Margaret.
And it's kind of interesting in the sense that it doesn't line up because she's so hell-bent on trying to figure out where Hal is and what happened to him, which she had such a tumultuous relationship with her dad and he was so abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you kind of just think that she would just sweep it under the rug? And if her dad is just missing and her mom is fine, and what she's witnessed what her mom has gone through, I was kind of surprised that that character just didn't turn a blind eye.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now she was very much wanted to become, like, you know, a sleuth and discover yeah. her missing father.
I didn't really think about it until you just said it, but I think that could have something to do with Margaret's whole laissez-faire attitude of, oh yeah, I don't know where he is, whatever. I feel like that's what made Catherine want to find out what's going on. Because
mm-hmm.
she's like, this is not my mom who wasn't going to leave my dad even when he was doing all these horrible things. And the fact that she doesn't even care that he's missing, something is going on and she's got to get to the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that probably has something to do with it. And then once they figure out that he's been drinking again and all this stuff, it's kind of like, I think in a way she wants to find out where he is so that she can make sure that he's not going to come back.
Okay. Yeah.
Like that Margaret isn't going to take him back. The author said about Catherine and Margaret's relationship, Catherine has no sense for all the ways in which Margaret sacrificed for her and all the ways in which Margaret can be an incredibly strong person. Margaret still views Catherine as a petulant child in need of protection, unaware of all the ways in which Catherine has grown and is trying to improve herself. So Margaret is finally realizing that she didn't protect Catherine at all,
mm-hmm.
and that no one deserves to live the way that she is. And Catherine isn't giving Margaret credit for how strong she had to be to stay in that situation, because a lot of times it's only looked at as weakness, and it's mm-hmm. so much more complicated than that. So at the end, they kind of come to that understanding. And when Catherine appreciates that Margaret has been going through all of this and dealing with all of it, she's like, oh, wow, you're not as weak as I thought you were.
Mm-hmm.
And Margaret realizes, you know, she thought that what she was doing was best, and maybe it wasn't good enough, but there is still a path forward for them.
Yeah, because like you said, it's, I feel mothers in those situations, as long as they're getting the brunt of the abuse and it's not reflecting back on their children, but of course she doesn't realize how traumatic it still is in the mm-hmm. situation, because, oh, she's not being physically abused, but it doesn't mean she's not mentally abused, emotionally abused. Like, no, mm-hmm. she's witnessing her mom getting, you know, the shit kicked out of her on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot for a young, especially girl.
Of course.
To see. So she doesn't realize the realistic brunt that it puts on Catherine's mental health. Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a very real thing with women in this situation, because mm-hmm. they're able to compartmentalize it.
Mm-hmm.
So they just assume that everyone around them is also compartmentalizing it. But Catherine is a young girl. She's in her formative years. She's seeing this growing up. And then we find out that she has issues in her own relationships. She's not abusive, physically at least, but she doesn't have the map of what a healthy relationship looks like. So it's, you know, still affecting her. She's trying to handle her anger and she's making some strides, but it still scares her how similar she is to her father.
Yeah, judging from the tone of the relationship between her and her ex, and there was that one moment where she was on speakerphone,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of get the idea that even though she wasn't physically abusive, she still was verbally abusive
mm-hmm.
and mentally abusive, in that she hadn't properly handled her shit. So it reflected negatively on the relationship because she wasn't able to properly assess situations in the way that her girlfriend wanted her to.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And she wasn't taking enough steps to fix that and enough accountability of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like that breakup was really the kick in the ass that she needed.
Mm-hmm.
But she just felt so lost that she didn't know where to go from there. So she just channels energy into finding her dad.
Yeah. Which makes sense. And I could understand how this becomes kind of her new pet project,
mm-hmm.
because she doesn't have anything to focus on and she's not in the right headspace.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone that she really cared for broke up with her. So I get it in that hindsight.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you start talking through it, you're like, okay. And that's why I said at the top, I'm like, she had a lot of time on her hands. She's like, oh, I could take all this time off work. I'll be right there. Mm-hmm. And Margaret's like, what?
Yeah.
You never take time off work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it's said multiple times in the book. Frederica says it most often. Needs must when the devil drives. What does this phrase mean to you?
I don't even know. And I'm going to be fully honest with you. Every time they said it, I was like, I don't get it.
Same. And
I was like, needs must when the devil drives. I was like, Master Vale is called? Like, I don't know. Like, is the devil Master Vale or is the devil yourself? Like, I don't know.
Where's the driving? I don't know.
And also, I'm tired 90% of the time when I'm reading, so I read in the evening mm-hmm. when my day has gone completely by me, so my brain function is limited.
Mm-hmm.
So throwing these things at me at 9 o'clock at night aren't very helpful.
Yeah. Well, tell me why I read this book the first time, and I just never thought to look it up.
Uh-huh.
I just kept going, and I was like, wow, I don't know what the fuck that means. Just kept on going. So this time I was like, wow, maybe I should look it up.
That's so smart.
So it's an old proverb that means, when you are desperate, you must do things you ordinarily would not do.
Okay, that makes sense.
What do you say it like that?
I wish
it fits.
I wish that that was what was eloquently said.
But I kind of liked how it always came from Frederica, who kind of, she didn't talk in riddles, but she would, if she didn't want to answer a question, she would ignore it. She would, you know what I mean? Like, she was just kind of...
And she was so, like, old-timey, so her saying this proverb also makes sense with her character.
Yeah, but Margaret just never questioned it. She's like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, do you know? Because I don't know.
Because I don't know. So how the fuck do you know if I don't know?
Like, do you know? All right, so you already said this, but you didn't say why. So who was your favorite prankster and why?
It was Frederica, only because it was nice, I think, for Margaret to actually have kind of, I know like Edie was like a friend, but I feel like Frederica was looking out for Margaret in a way that nobody else was. And there was that moment that was kind of sweet where she made tea for the first time for Margaret, and Margaret's like, Hal's never made me tea or made it correctly. And Frederica, a woman who doesn't know me, you know, from anyone, can make my tea so spot on. And so it's just this, and throughout the book when Catherine's coming and she says, like, I need you to back off, and Frederica's kind of upset about that, and she just constantly wants to help and everything. It was just a really nice relationship to see, and you could tell that she had Margaret's back 100% when she didn't need to. She didn't have any loyalty to her. Just because she's a new person living in the house doesn't mean that she's owed anything. So she kind of just creates this actual friendship with Margaret, and towards the end of the book it was really nice seeing too, because she was one of the ones that was trying to help her to get like Master Vale out, and she would help her close the door and stuff. So it was just a really, really nice relationship.
And they had that really sweet moment where they're leaning against the basement door and they're holding hands.
Yep. And like you said, it's like, even like Margaret knows that every time that she's touching her, she has to keep reliving the horrible death that Frederica experienced. She's okay with it because she just needs that human touch, even though it's not really like an actual human touch. She just needs that because she's not getting it from anywhere else.
Yeah, and I also like that Frederica is affected by everything going on in September.
Yeah.
She's still trying to be so helpful.
I know. I thought it was a cute quirk of hers that she just doesn't know what the fuck to do. And so she's so consumed with the terror of this month that she's like, oh, the kitchen plates have to go in the bathtub. And I need to put
But
dirt
she doesn't
cabinets.
Acknowledge it.
No.
Because
she doesn't.
Margaret would be like, Frederica, what happened in here? And she's like, ma'am, you need tea? What are you talking about? And then she asked where the tea bag. She's like, in the attic. Like, just so
just so nonchalant.
Yeah,
like,
it is what it is.
No humor, just completely like, oh, this is normal. This everything that I'm doing is normal.
Frederica is definitely my favorite, but I also really enjoyed Elias, because Margaret just had such funny interactions with him. And even though he would get kind of violent and he would bite, and Hal would be like, I need him out of my space. We can't have a biting ghost. Margaret's like, yeah, but if you just stay out of his personal space, he's not going to bite you. Like, it's understandable why he's biting you, because you get too close to him. And she just rationalized his behavior and then would dig up his mother's bones and put them in a trash bag and bring them in and reunite them and sing a lullaby so he would go away with his mom for a
that
few days.
Wild. I was like, Margaret's really put in the work.
Really. And when the cops come and she's just covered in dirt.
I know.
And she's just dug up the bones. And then she's like, there's bones somewhere. And they're like, there's another dead body. And she's like, no, I don't know. Frederica, where'd you put the bones?
She's just slightly like losing it, but not necessarily losing her mind. She's just losing control of the situation. She's
because
trying
it's
so hard to keep it contained, and it just...
And the lack of sleep has her spiraling. Not at her best. And mm-hmm. then when she's having the conversation with Catherine and the pranksters are standing in front of her and standing over her. And then when they're talking about Hal, when they found his dead body, and they're like, he's down there. And you're like, oh my God, is that what the pranksters were talking about the whole time? Mm. And it's just kind of this, another dual meaning.
Yeah.
Of what these pranksters were up to. But I'm just picturing her, like, trying to see around them.
Oh, my God.
Catherine can't see them, so she's like,
what are you doing? And I can just envision, like, how scary that must be just to see, like, this dead child in front of your face the entire time. And you can't.
But she's not scared.
No, because she's used to them.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm like, no, thank you. I'm good.
And Edie's like, isn't it uncomfortable to see her face like that? And Margaret's like, no. You can get used to anything unpleasant. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
She truly is the best owner for that house, realistically.
Oh, absolutely. But I just feel bad that poor Margaret, every time she tries to take a stand, when she tries to stand up to Hal, she's like, you're never going to touch my daughter again. And then he beats the shit out of her. And then she's like, Master Vale, get the fuck out of my house. And he's like, I'm going to try and suck your soul out like a Dementor. Mm-hmm. And then that doesn't work either. She always needs a little bit of backup.
She does.
Which is fine.
It is fine sometimes.
And she realizes, she talks about that a lot, about loneliness and how you don't realize that you're lonely mm-hmm. until you really sit and think about it because you just get used to being alone. And I also really liked her relationship with Edie because it's like, this was the first friend that Hal let her have. Mm-hmm. And even though he didn't really like her, and he made it clear that he wasn't too happy about her being there, she was just some nosy neighbor, whatever, he still let that relationship continue. Mm-hmm. And she was able to confide everything in Edie and talk to her about everything. And Edie obviously believed her. We find out later why. But just, you know, readily believed her and started seeing the ghosts and sees Frederica and all this stuff. So I just thought it was very sweet, these relationships that she made with all of these ghosts.
Yeah, and it was like I said before, I like how they all came to her rescue in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she was standing up for them and getting the house back for them, because mm-hmm. Master Vale is the reason that all of them are there, that all of them are dead. Mm-hmm. So she's standing with them to take back what's theirs, essentially. So they're standing with her while also delivering the justice to Master Vale.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is a gory book. This is,
yeah,
it is graphic.
Mm-hmm. But I also just like at the end, the cop in the car is just like, well, that happened. And that's a thing.
Just like staring into space, like trying to comprehend mm-hmm. what happened.
Like, that's a thing that happened. All right.
Yeah. Which, like, everyone acts like she's going to believe them, but ain't no way.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think about the horror level of this book?
It was scary as fuck. Especially the basement scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like when her and Hal went down in the basement the 1 year, and they just see him in, like, his creepy murder room.
Yeah, like his torture chamber.
And I'm just like, oh my God. It was, obviously, and then, you know, there's no lights, it's just completely dark and dank down there.
Mm-hmm.
So, just, no, I don't like that at all. So it was just, no, it was scary. There was a lot of the times that I was severely, like, creeped out.
Mm-hmm. I love the different levels
mm-hmm.
of scary that correlate with the ghosts. Everything with Master Vale was scary as shit.
Mm-hmm.
But then everything with Frederica's not scary at all. It's great.
No, it wasn't. Like, that was just,
and the pranksters, harmless.
No, Elias was creepy.
Yeah. But, like I said, he's misunderstood. Stay away from him. I, as a person who likes her personal space, I get it.
Yeah.
I don't bite, usually, but.
But then also,
if I was murdered,
all, like, the murdered children showing up day by day was also really creepy.
Oh, yeah. Because by the end, there's, like, 10 children just running amok in the house. And they're all pointing and chanting. And they're leaving stains. They're leaving their intestines. They're mm-hmm. leaving blood trails. And Margaret's like, I'm just trying to keep the house clean. Fedrika, can you help me? You move the cleaning supplies, and now there's also couch cushions under here.
Oh god, there was that gross scene where she's at the kitchen sink and there's like a fleshy in the sink blocking it. And, like, the sink full of blood. I was like, couldn't be me.
Yeah, Margaret just rolls with them punches, man. All right, let's get to the ratings. It's real on the nose. Our rating scale is pranksters.
Oh, that's cute. I mean, cute in the sense that they weren't cute, but...
But pranksters is an adorable name for these ghosts.
It is. I like that she called them that.
And anyone else, like Catherine showing up to this house and seeing all of these creepy, dismembered, bleeding children would be scared. And Margaret's like, those silly pranksters.
I know.
Just really...
She sees it in such a different... It's like such a skewed view.
And she sees it as, which this is also something so unique... She sees it as, it's their house.
Mm-hmm.
They lived here before I did.
Yeah.
And so she respects their space so that they'll respect her space. Mm-hmm. And normally, haunted houses, you're like, get the fuck out of here. This is my house now. She's like, as long as you guys are respecting my space, I'm going to respect yours. Master Vale.
I know. Fuck Master Vale. Yeah, it was a really cool concept that she... was like, no, I finally have my perfect house, and you are not fucking taking this away from me. So we will live here in harmony as best as we possibly can.
And the house sounded amazing.
Yeah,
it's like did. 3 stories, wraparound porch. Sounded great. All right, so I obviously gave this 5 pranksters. This was the first book I read of 2024. And I immediately gave it 5 stars. I was obsessed with it. I started out on the best foot. And sometimes on the reread, it doesn't hit the same way. This one did. I thought Margaret was an amazing character. The nonchalant attitude, the walls she had to build around herself to survive. I really like the parallels between Margaret and Hal's abusive relationship and her relationship with the house. And I came away thinking... wow, that was so entertaining and endearing. And meanwhile, it had these horribly dark themes with the abuse, children being murdered and cannibalized. But Margaret's point of view just ties all of it together and makes it this darkly funny and, yes, gory horror story.
I completely agree. Because it's such, there's so much terror and horrific things that happen throughout this book, both in the past and in the present. And you don't, like, I didn't get any icky feeling. I didn't feel upset during certain scenes. It just kind of all made sense and was really interloped together very, very well. Like, again, I'm just always impressed with these fucking debut novels. But then it's hard because then they put out these debut novels and you have to kind of now meet this standard of, like, this first book that you put out.
No, so absolutely.
She eventually writes a second one, if she chooses to, like, it's going to... It's... She's... The cards are stacked against her now because she just wrote this amazing, like... This is one of the better debut novels I think we've read.
Yeah, it's great. And this whole... Like you said, you didn't feel icky. I think the whole book... As you're reading, you know that in the end things are going to work out. But because it's such a unique story, you don't know how they're going to work out. But you do have this positive aspect. Like, you know that all of this drama between Catherine and Margaret and Hal is going to get resolved. You know that it's working towards something. So it just kind of has this light at the end of the tunnel feeling.
I agree, which is also why I gave it 5 pranksters. And it was... It's not like I don't not... like horror, because I feel like I can read any genre and enjoy it, but I think it's just finding the niche and the books that I actually like in that genre. And I think that I can't watch scary movies. I can read, though, I think, but you won't catch me watching anything scary. So the extent of my scary is like The Craft and Scream, and that's about it. And The Shining. I do love The Shining. And Halloween. Okay, I like some horror movies.
But all right, you like the classics, obviously.
But, like, you won't... I'm never going to watch The Conjuring. I'm never going to watch Hereditary. I'm never going to watch The Nun or any of these... No. The Terrifier. Like, I'm good. I'm good. I saw The Exorcist when I was a young girl, and it scarred me for life. So,
oh, yeah.
I'm fine.
To this day, I won't rewatch The Exorcist because Mm-mm. it is still in my mind the scariest movie I've ever seen. And I love scary movies, but it scarred me. And I also don't want to watch it because I want it to stay as the scariest movie I've ever seen.
But that crab walk down the stairs. No.
Oh, that's the scariest scene.
Uh-huh.
And that's just, I have nightmares about.
You know, and considering the time frame that that movie came out, like, the makeup was so amazing
mm-hmm.
to, like, create this scary character at that, you know, that time of year, or, you know what I mean? Like, that...
Yeah, that time period.
Yes, thank you. It still scares the fuck out of me.
Absolutely. It's terrifying.
Like, I see pictures of it. I'm like, no. I'm like, please. No, thank
like,
you.
Ugh. I remember when the Hot Topic in Jersey Gardens, when I was a teenager, they had an Exorcist poster, a glow-in-the-dark Exorcist poster in the dressing room. Mm-mm. And so I couldn't go in and try on any clothes. And then now, obviously, Hot Topic is, like, all kitschy, you know, like, pop culture stuff. But I remember being so terrified. And I'm like, why are they doing this to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Thank you. But yeah, so even though, like, horror is not my go-to genre, this was still a really well-written story.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy you loved it. I know this is kind of... This is like a genre-bending horror, because it mm-hmm. does have that dark humor. It does have that little, not thriller, but you know what I mean? Like, that mm-hmm. little mystery element. It does have the gore.
But the gore wasn't even... Like, again, I didn't get the ick feeling. Mm-hmm. I got... When the gore happened, it made sense in the moment. And it
yes.
kind of brought to light the situation in a way that was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like, I don't know, like, when I think about when we read, like, The Only Good Indians and, like, things would happen, I'm like, I didn't get, it just didn't make sense. Whereas with this and that situation, it all made sense when it happened. So I understood.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing with horror novels in general that does happen a lot, is that sometimes it's extra gory just to be extra gory, mm-hmm. just to have that shock factor. Whereas this, if you break it down and pull out all of those pages where it's really graphic, yeah, it's a lot, but it all kind of flows.
It didn't make you feel grossed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm so happy that it read as well the second time, mm-hmm. because there's always that risk.
There's always a risk.
But I still love it. And mm-hmm. you know what? I hope Chris Orlando doesn't write anything else.
Honestly, sometimes I think that you should cut your losses. If you mm-hmm. write something so good, don't jinx yourself.
Or wait long enough that mm-hmm. we don't have this in the back of our heads.
Exactly.
But can't deny that she did a great job.
Mm-hmm. She really did.
Because even just the writing in general, I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so anything else you want to add?
No, I think we're good.
That's all we have for you today. We hope that this book is hitting you in the sweet spot of spooky season.
Mm-hmm.
If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcalfpod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at fullybookedcalfpod to see our upcoming reads. We also have a lot of book recommendations for spooky season, a lot of witchy books, BIPOC reads, a lot of good stuff. Thanks for checking us out. And remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked.
Bye! Bye.